Andrew Gillum launches a new push to get 1 million Florida residents registered to vote.
Will fees stop thousands of convicted felons from getting back their right to vote after serving their sentences?
And how the state may stop local tax increases.
This is the Florida Roundup from WLRN Public Media in Miami and WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Andrew Gillum and Florida Democrats want to register 1 million new voters before next year's election. Republicans say that'll just mean more GOP voters. Meantime, state lawmakers move forward with a plan that would require convicted felons to pay all their fees before they regain the right to vote. Plus, we'll have a look at the state plan that could actually make it tougher to raise local taxes.
It's all ahead. You can join the conversation at 305-995-1800 on the Florida Roundup. Next. Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, Andrew Gillum lost the governor's race by fewer than 33,000 votes. That's less than half of a percentage point. Gillum was expected by some to announce a race for president this week, but instead he launched a massive voter registration effort here in the Sunshine State with the goal of signing up 1 million Floridians to vote before the next big election in 2020.
Now, I know everybody who's registered doesn't necessarily vote, but it certainly helps to have more marbles on the table, and if a few fall off, It didn't cost you the election.
Now, this is an effort that's welcomed by Joe Gruters. He's a state senator here in Florida. He's also chairman of the Republican Party of Florida.
As they're going out and doing their canvassing, you know, we're going to benefit from it as well.
Democrats here in the Sunshine State hold a slight lead among registered voters with about 300,000 more Democrats than registered Republicans. But, you know, Melissa, 10 years ago, Democrats had a 700,000 vote spread, more voters than Republicans. Here's Gillum this week.
And in a 1% state like Florida is, it matters that we have as many people on our side registered to vote, and then let's do the difficult work of making sure that we get as many of them to turn out. 100,000 votes can be the difference between who becomes governor and who controls the White House.
But the Republican in this conversation, Joe Gruters, thinks demographics and time is on the side of the GOP.
The great thing for us is we have all these retirees leaving their high-tax liberal states, moving to Florida. And I think it's a hotbed of activity for us to go after them as new voters here in Florida.
So it's an interesting place to start this week here on the Florida Roundup. This push to register voters comes as more than 1.5 million Floridians had their voting rights restored as a result of Amendment 4, the amendment passed by voters last fall. It automatically returns the right to vote to most people convicted of a felony after they've fulfilled their sentence. But what does that mean, completion of all terms of a sentence?
We're beginning the hour here on the Florida Roundup this Friday with a closer look at Gillum's voter registration drive, Amendment 4, and voter rights restoration in the Sunshine State, and some obstacles that the legislature might put up along the way. If you're not registered to vote, but plan to, will you vote in 2020? Did you have your rights restored under Amendment 4? What do you think of the new push to pay back fees before you can cast a ballot? We want your calls statewide. Join the conversation here on the Florida Roundup right now. The number is 305-995-1800. Or tweet the show at Florida Roundup as we welcome Danny Rivera, reporter for WLRN. He's been covering the voter rights push. And Neil Voltz, political director for the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. Danny, let's start with you. The significance, first off, what do you think? How significant will this push by Andrew Gillum be to sign up 1 million new voters in Florida, long renowned as the most purple, the most swingiest of swing states? Can it make a difference?
Well, first of all, I think it's worth acknowledging that it's a very high goal that they've set for themselves to register 1 million voters in the state. You know, I was at the speech that Gillum gave this week in Miami Gardens. It was short on details about exactly how they're going to do that. He described it as basically doing the footwork of democracy. He said this is not the sexy work. This is the hard work. And he described it as, you know, block by block, door to door engagement with people. It's still unclear exactly how that is going to play out when it really rolls out. but it's certainly ambitious. And if they can pull off even half of that, I mean, it could be very significant.
Danny, I'm wondering what you make of the effort that is coming from Gillum, the Democratic nominee for governor, and the Florida Democratic Party, which is also putting together its own voter registration drive. Are they going to focus on traditionally Democratic precincts and Democratic blocks to try to perhaps address what Joe Gruters, the head of the Republican Party of Florida, says Republicans can benefit from this voter registration drive, too?
Well, I mean, there is truth to what Senator Gruters is saying. You know, Florida does, in addition to the people that live here, it draws in older voters from other parts of the country that might tend to swing for the GOP. Now, it hasn't exactly been explicit, but I look at what Andrew Gillum is doing along the lines of what Stacey Abrams has been doing in Georgia. Hmm. And, you know, before she ran for governor last year, she focused very much on, you know, registering the black community to vote, registering Latinos to vote, demographics that, you know, underperform when compared to their GOP, you know, counterparts. Mm-hmm. And so Gillum is basically starting to mount along the lines of the same thing. And he launched this in Miami Gardens, which is the largest black city in the entire state. And mayor of Miami Gardens, Oliver Gilbert, beforehand said, you know, we're starting this here. And he said, you know, on the city level, they're gonna help out. They actually started an office of what they call community engagement, which will help people at the municipal level register to vote. So the fact that he started it in the blackest city in the state, I think speaks to which direction they're going in this.
And we're talking about voter registration in Florida here on the Florida Roundup this Friday. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 305-995-1800, tweets at Florida Roundup. As we bring in Neil Volz now, he's political director for the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, the group that was instrumental in getting the successful passage of Amendment 4, amended to the state constitution last November, adding 1.5 million new Floridians to the state's voter rolls, returning citizens, those with a prior felony conviction who now are able to vote. They weren't before. Neil, this was a massive expansion of the franchise, not just for Florida, but for the entire nation. Perhaps the biggest expansion of voter rights since the passage of the Voting Rights Act in the mid-60s. I want to ask you, I know you really savored that victory over Amendment 4 passing. At the same time, the legislature in Tallahassee is now looking at having returning citizens pay fees before they can access the ballot box. That's a measure they're considering this spring legislative session. What's the reaction of the Rights Restoration Coalition to that move by the legislature?
One, thanks for having me on the show and mentioning that, yeah, you're right. We are witnessing the biggest expansion of democracy in 50 plus years, and it's happening here in our state, you know, and that is definitely worth celebrating. And it came about because we were able to kind of walk this out together in a very unified way. This was not about partisanship. This was not about division. This was about a unity and a belief that when your debt's paid, it's paid. And so to your point about the fact that, you know, the legislature has now taken a step in the House that gets away from the basic understanding of what completion of sentence means in the state of Florida, it could impact the lives of, you know, thousands and thousands of returning citizens and families and every community all across our state. And so the returning citizen community in Florida has gotten riled up by this, gotten engaged, and people are more active than they've been since the campaign.
And how do you plan to respond to it? Critics of the measure are calling it a backdoor sabotage of Amendment 4, saying some folks might not be able to afford to pay whatever outstanding fees that they might still owe the state. They're calling this voter suppression. The legislature is saying that it's simply getting people to complete all of the terms of their sentence. And so as we wait to see whether this passes, muster in the legislature. Do you consider this move a form of voter suppression?
Yeah, what we view this as is an overreach of the legislative process. We think that what's happened is that a step is being discussed and looked at that would change what we're doing right now. Like right now, there is a process in place that Democrat and Republican governors have used to determine completion of sentence as it relates to somebody with a past conviction being able to vote. And if a move is made, this legislation passes, it actually would restrict and take a step in the wrong direction, meaning less people can vote than what the current standard is. And our belief is that if we can make a clarion call to all of our elected officials, our neighbors, our friends, those of us who supported Amendment 4, and educate people on the facts and what is going on and what's being debated, that hopefully we can get to that place where we're reminded of what happens when we can simply unify behind the simple premise that when a debt's paid, it's paid.
So what's being debated here is, of course, the implementation of Amendment 4, which passed overwhelming by Florida voters in November of 2018, allowing the restoration of voting rights for most convicted felons after completion of their sentence. The language in that was added to the Florida Constitution here says, quote, voting rights shall be restored upon completion of all terms of sentence, including parole or probation. Danny Rivero, how does that relate to fines? And what's the difference between a fine and a fee assessed to someone who's convicted of a felony in Florida?
Right. So it's worth noting that in the amendment itself that people voted on, the word fine was never explicitly on there, but it did say all terms of a sentence. And the difference between a fine and a fee is a fine is at a state level, there's criminal statutes that for any number of crimes. And a lot of those statutes statutorily have fines attached to them. So if you get convicted of drug trafficking, say, is a $25,000 mandatory fine, and that can go up to $500,000 per count as a fine.
So that's part of the sentence.
That's part of a sentence.
All right.
There's a lot of crimes that have similar fines attached to them and number amounts attached to them. Fees are kind of user fees. You use the court system. You can get hit with a public defender fee to get the help from a public defender. It's basically access fees.
Yeah. So Neil, let me ask you, do you interpret this language as saying that the fines as part of a sentence have to be paid and completed, but perhaps not fees assessed?
Yeah, the way we view this is geared around what the judge's sentence was, right? So it's like, what happened on the day of sentencing? What was the judge's sentence? And what we've seen in this debate is sometimes people want to use the term fines or fees interchangeably in all circumstances. Our view is that if somebody while incarcerated gets sick and gets assessed a fee because they were sick and they had healthcare costs,
right,
that is post-sentence. That has nothing to do with what the judge said.
There's also fees, though, that are kind of baked into the felony process. In Miami-Dade County, there's a crime prevention fee in felonies of $50. There's the possibility of a public defender application fee of $50, domestic violence surcharge fee of $201. Would you consider those, if they're assessed as part of a convicted felon, that they would have to be paid in order for the restoration rights to happen?
Yeah, and can I answer that real quick, but also with a caveat that one of the reasons why it's so important to go to the process that's currently in place is that for decades people have had these conversations and have worked through some of these processes, because what we could end up doing is trying to spend millions and millions of dollars to track down every piece of paper from somebody who had a conviction 40 years ago if we're not careful. And I don't know that that's good stewardship of our tax dollars to go into every instance in every locality as it relates to. But basically, it rolls back to what did the judge give you as a sentence on the day of sentencing.
Let me ask you, Neil, the House wants restitution to include not just fees charged by the courts, but even sometimes, it's my understanding, debts that would be handed over to collections agencies. Those can tack on huge fees over time. Many returning citizens wouldn't be able to afford to pay those kinds of monies. We're getting lots of tweets about this here on the Florida Roundup. We'll go to those in a moment, along with your calls at 305-995-1800. I want to ask you, Neil, a little background about you. You served a sentence because you were a former Republican lobbyist in D.C. who got caught up in the Jack Abramoff scandal. Capital D.C. watchers might remember that, people listening here in Florida. You pushed for the rights restoration in Florida simply because you felt that it was the right thing to do. And this won widespread bipartisan support. I want to ask you, what's your response to those who have been criticizing the legislature for tacking on or trying to tack on this fee requirement to the passage of Amendment 4? It's a conservative-dominated legislature. Critics of this move have called this a backdoor way to tamp down Democratic votes that they perceive would be swelling the voter rolls with the passage of Amendment 4, voters that might lean more Democratic. Can I get your response to that and how you see that aspect of this whole situation?
Yeah, I would say that look, I've been involved in conservative politics for 20 plus years. I consider myself a conservative, and I believe that the returning citizen community is one that includes people from all walks of life and all political persuasions. We are united in the fact that we've dealt with the criminal justice system. And so many of us take the view that we've worked really long and hard and are grateful for the citizens of Florida that gave back the eligibility to vote, but we're waiting to see what elected officials do before we make a decision in terms of who we will and will not support. And so what happens now actually matters in terms of answering that question more so than what we might or might not think coming into it. So I think we're in for an interesting couple years because both parties have an opportunity to woo these new voters. And I think right now you're beginning to see a situation in which, you know, there are some folks who have decided to step up and throw roadblocks in the way of people accessing the voting booth, and that might not be helpful. But we hope that we can move forward in a way that focuses on people and not politics.
Before we get there, Neil, in terms of the interesting couple of election cycles with these potential new voters, we've got to get through the next couple of weeks to see kind of how this implementation potentially happens here in Florida with the legislature, talking about the implementation debate about Amendment 4, the restoration of rights, voting rights for convicted felons. 305-995-1800 at Florida Roundup on Twitter. We'll begin the calls in Palm Harbor. Jose has been patient on line 3. Go ahead, Jose. You're on the radio.
Good afternoon. I just want to comment. You know, I work for the federal government myself, and I've actually been in rulemaking. And it seems like our government makes rules not for the well-being of the citizen, of the community. Here they're making, you know, they're going to give these people the right to come out. However, they're going to put another little block where, and if this is about voting, where they can't vote unless they pay their fees. Considering these people are coming out of jail, they're not going to be able to get jobs. If they do, they get minimum paying jobs. Those minimum paying jobs hardly put them through life. And now, you know, it's a cycle of we form people to continue to do what they do because we don't make rules to better the system.
Jose, we get it. I appreciate that input from Palm Harbor. Danny Rivera with WLRN making the argument of the requirement for fee payment by these convicted felons amounts to a poll tax. What kind of ammunition is that in this debate that's happening in Tallahassee around this implementation?
Well, I think in order to answer that, we would need to go back 20 years or so. There was in 1998, there was a constitutional amendment that was passed here in Florida that required the entire court system for the state to be funded by fines and fees. Hmm. Now, Florida is the only state in the country that does this. We're completely an outlier in this regard. And after that is when all these fines and fees were added to these sentences. So Florida finds itself in the position where we're the only court system in the country that entirely funds itself through fines and fees, but that was never attached to the right to vote. That was just never the case.
Right.
Now, with Amendment 4 in effect, it has been attached to that. So you have all these criminal statutes that now have a completely new implication. You know, can you vote? Can you pay for it? Can you not pay for it? And then now that means, you know, you might be able to vote or not.
Lots of tweets coming into the show about this. Here's one. This is crazy. It seems that after every time voters pass an amendment, the legislature or governor refuses to implement the will of the voters. Do you agree? Call us up on the Florida Roundup as we continue talking about voter rights in the state and your calls. It's 305-995-1800. Your voice right after this break. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, and thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami, talking about the restoration of voting rights for convicted felons in Florida. Florida voters passed overwhelmingly Amendment 4 in November. The state legislature is now debating a bill that would implement that in ways that critics say would amount to potentially a poll tax for some disenfranchised voters in the state of Florida. What does it mean to complete a sentence in Florida? On this debate, Attorney John Mills explained the proposed amendment to the Florida Supreme Court when the court was considering whether or not it qualified to be on the 2018 ballot.
All matters, anything that a judge puts in a sentence.
So it would also include the full payment of any fines?
Yes, sir. All terms means all terms within the four corners.
Payment of fines to be considered completion of a prison sentence here, Melissa. Lots of phone calls at 305-995-1800 and tweets it at Florida Roundup.
As we continue talking with Danny Rivero, reporter at WLRN in Miami, and Neil Voltz, political director for the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. Let me ask you, Neil, a quick question. You know, we just had a city election in Jacksonville on Tuesday, re-electing the mayor, the sheriff, some city council folks, and other constitutional offices. And there were some returning citizens who cast a ballot in Jacksonville, some for the first time in their lives. They had never been able to vote until the passage of Amendment 4. Very emotional for some of these brand new voters. Now, to my understanding, they were not required to pay any fees or fines outstanding that they hadn't already been made aware of when they went in to vote. That could potentially change, though. So we have already seen some votes cast in the state since the passage of Amendment 4 without this provision that's moving through the legislature. Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, when I think about people registering to vote and looking at that form and saying, hey, you know, have I completed all portions of my sentence, you know, in good faith? Do I know that to be the case? And registering to vote, what you're seeing is the kickoff of a process that culminated in November. Like, it was a vote of five million plus Floridians who said, you know what, like, that we are an outlier in the nation in terms of how we allow people to reintegrate back into the community. At the time, we were one of four states that permanently barred people from voting because of past felony convictions. And so I think about the unity of that moment, you know, church leaders in Jacksonville and amazing leaders and coalitions and individuals in the Jacksonville area who helped make that happen. So for the community of Jacksonville, it was a real celebration. And I understand the conversation and the need to have clarifying guidelines for how we move forward in a process. But we also just need to remember that there's already a system in place today, that there are guidelines that guide these conversations, and that they've taken a long time
and
to put those together.
You designed the amendment to be self-executing, as I understand it. Isn't that right? That it's self-explanatory.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court unanimously ruled that the language was clear, and this and we know that it is self-executing, as we saw on January 8th when people went in to register to vote. The highest authority in the state, the Constitution, clearly states that when someone's completed all terms of their sentence, they have the right to vote. So, you know, this conversation is happening underneath the Constitution, and we believe in upholding the constitutional principles, and is why we were so celebratory when the Constitution was able to change, because that was the people's willingness to want to change the Constitution, because this is ultimately an issue about people and their lives and all of our community.
But doesn't the legislature have the right to write a law itself that kind of essentially could include fees in the restoration process if it wants?
I mean, let me just preface this by, you know, I don't want to be necessarily the lawyer who is guiding conversations about all this kind of portion of the conversation. But of course, the legislature, there's a legislative process.
Right.
The courts will have a say. The Secretary of State and the Division of Elections, they have responsibilities to manage systems. And we believe that there's a constitutional order in the state. Okay. And that ultimately the job of interpreting the Constitution lands in the courts.
Let me bring in a caller. Jim in Orlando has been patient on line 8. Go ahead, Jim. You've got a different view here.
Yeah, I do. I mean, look, we're talking about disenfranchised and a poll tax. If it's required that someone pays a fee for having victimized a member of our community, whether it's court costs, investigative costs, whatever, all right, then it has to be paid. If there's a conversation that needs to be had about getting rid of them because they can't pay for it, well, then let's get rid of them. But you know, it's the same thing when it comes to saying there's mass incarceration. Well, there's a lot of laws getting broken. Let's get rid of the laws then if you don't want people in jail. You know, so if part of the process of being a member of community and repaying your debt to society is paying the debts to the court and to the people, because were it not for those crimes, there would not be the trials. It's not a punitive side. I don't think it should be punitive. It should be restorative.
Yeah.
You know.
Jim, I hear you. We've seen lots of criminal justice studies, however, pointing back to, for instance, the war on drugs in the 1980s and 90s and the higher jail terms for crack cocaine versus powder cocaine, which specifically wound up affecting minority communities much more than majority white communities. Danny Rivero at WLRN. So there's a piece of equality here and equal access under the law and equal treatment under the law, isn't there?
Yeah, there absolutely is. And, you know, related to that, there was just a couple of weeks ago a unanimous Supreme Court decision in Washington, the mm-hmm. Washington Supreme Court, that tackled broadly the issue of fines that were levied against people.
So, and forfeiture fines too,
It was specifically about forfeiture fines, but in some ways, I've talked to attorneys, they're looking at this case as, you know, potential ammunition for any lawsuit that might arise from this, because part of it says that, you know, there is a fundamental difference when you issue a fine to generate revenue, because other forms of punishment cost the state money. When you get fines for revenue, there's a different incentive there. Hmm. And the Supreme Court says we should treat these things differently. Florida funds its court system through fines and fees to avoid charging other people taxes. So it's offsetting potential tax revenue by issuing these fines. And out of some of the reporting I've done, you know, in the last 5 years, between 2013 and 2018, there was over $1 billion charged to people for fines related to felonies. Only 19% of that money ever got paid back. Hmm. So the state knows very well that the vast majority of these fines are never going to be paid back.
It's 305-995-1800. Amendment 4 passed overwhelmingly last fall, restoring voting rights to returning citizens who've completed their sentences. The legislature now, though, is saying that 1.5 million new voter base must pay fines and fees before they can vote. That's if they pass that measure into law. Daryl tweets the Florida Roundup, "I'm a taxpayer that voted 4-4. My tax dollars pay to house inmates. Why can't they pay other fees post-sentence if they are assessed?" Susie tweets the show, "Once again, I voted for a simple amendment, and the legislature is fudging it up once again. We need to vote out those people." She says, we have lots of calls here on the Florida Roundup. 305-995-1800. Rick is in Jacksonville. Hi, Rick. Happy Friday. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to say that since the original intent of this law, these laws, was to suppress the vote, that I suspect in the future, if the legislature's ploy succeeds, you're going to see a lot more fines, heavy fines, attached to crimes where they otherwise would not be in and where they are not now. I do mental health assessments for the court, and I can tell you that virtually no crime, even drug dealing and other economic crimes, have heavy fines attached to them now, if only because they have no hope of collecting. But I think in the future, you'll see the people who they didn't want voting being assessed heavy fines, even for
And I think just to
Rick, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, there actually is nothing preventing the legislature from issuing any additional fines and fees from this point on. So the caller is exactly right. I mean, it's something that could potentially happen, and could, if this bill that's moving through the Florida House right now, if that's signed into law, you know, there's nothing stopping the legislature from saying, you know what, we're going to attack
doing that.
Yeah, we're going to tack more fines onto it.
And Danny, thanks for that. Thanks for that call. That's Rick in Jacksonville. Neil Voltz with the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. Let's kind of walk us through this process. Let's say you serve your time, you get out, fines and fees added up while you were behind bars, maybe by a lot, depending on how long you went away. There are sometimes other fees from work release, monitoring, probation. And if you can't start paying them as soon as you're released, the debt collector can tack on a surcharge. In the state of Florida, you can lose your driver's license if you don't pay these fees. That could make it all but impossible to get a job to earn money to pay these fines and fees. And so the argument against this is that by tying voting rights to the payment of these fees and fines, critics say the state might as well just decide to toss out the results of this ballot initiative entirely. So how will your coalition try to lobby, I guess, in the legislature as they take up this measure, as they vet this proposal?
That was important for us as this movement got built and people rallied behind that kind of simple premise of when a debt's paid, it's paid, is that we took the long term. It took about 10 years to get Amendment 4 on the ballot. It took 4 years to professionalize the campaign, right? So you're talking about people in every community across the state of Florida. We're real neighbors. We're, you know, I know I listened to that listener who called in before, and I appreciate what he was saying. I know the consequences of dealing with my own bad decisions helped change the trajectory of my life. And so I think consequences are important, and the sentence the judge gives out is important. And so for all of us who are members of our communities, we're going to continue to educate our neighbors and talk to our friends and put a human face on exactly these policies and do so in a way with the long term in mind. We know that we are going to advocate for the next couple months, and we know that the legislature is going to do what the legislature is going to do, and we're going to continue to march and move forward and be good members of our community and continue to be leaders in our community and continue to educate folks on exactly the issues that you're talking about. This show's great. It you know, most of the financial obligations somebody has get tied into their probation, right? So many in other states, sometimes that's the trigger. When you're done with probation, then your sentence is completed. But every state is a little bit differently, and I appreciate this conversation bringing light to the fact that you know, there is a difference between certain fees assessed by the judge and certain fees not assessed by the judge.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why we got here was because of how the Scott administration, then Governor Rick Scott, was applying clemency, and how the Florida cabinet was applying clemency, and how that had changed significantly under Governor Rick Scott compared to previous governors. You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Danny Rivero, were fees and fines part of the clemency process prior to the debate that we're having now on the potential implementation of Amendment 4?
The short answer is no. I mean, they were not considered as part of the clemency process. And in fact, you know, this part of this varies county to county, but you can get off probation if you're still owing some fines or fees in some places. In Miami-Dade County, if you still owe fines, you can get off of probation. Mm-hmm. You know, if you owe some fines or fees, some of that can be transferred into a civil judgment instead of part of your criminal sentence. The bill moving through the House says even if it's part of a civil judgment, that is part of your sentence. And I think, you know, I've talked to some attorneys in national civil rights groups, and they're taking a broad look at this in, you know, potentially thinking if this goes through that they might file some lawsuits. And it's impossible to talk about this without going back to what the constitutional amendment I talked about that passed in 98,
right,
which said, you know, you fund the court system through these fines and fees. So the issue is, if this goes into litigation, it's going to go very deep into statutes and different parts of the state constitution. So I think people should open themselves up to the fact that this might be actually a starting point as a way for criminal justice advocates to tackle the entire system rather than actually the end result that a lot of people thought it would be.
Could be a lead to a total comprehensive look again at criminal statutes and sentencing, felony sentencing in the state of Florida is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Very significant. Peter in Fort Lauderdale, one of our listeners and callers here. Peter, thanks for your time. You mentioned that you have served some time. Is that right? Peter, you with us on the phone from Fort Lauderdale? Oh, sounds like we got a bad cell connection there in Fort Lauderdale. Susan in Morriston on line 3. Go ahead, Susan. You've got some personal experience with criminal justice, too.
Yes. Hi. My son got in trouble when he was 18. He has served his time. He's paid back all his restitution and registered to vote. And now I'm wondering, are they going? Is legislature trying to give additional fines that would prevent him from doing this?
So the question, Danny, here is additional fines for somebody who's been out for a good number of years and has had a free and clear bill, has paid all the fines and fees.
I'm not an attorney. I
just
don't,
a reporter.
Yeah, I don't believe you would be able to retroactively say that this crime, you know, we can retroactively add a fine or a fee to it. I don't think you can do that.
One of the things,
Neil Voltz, have they specified that? Do we know?
Well, and I agree with that general assessment that it's likely you can't retroactively do that, but it is part of the conversation. And if you do retroactively do something like that, what about the people who have received the ability to vote from the governors over the past 20 some years operating under the previous standard that we just discussed? So what does that do to them? Like, this is an issue, if I can just say it again and again, that this is not a political science exercise for those of us who are impacted by this legislation and these policies. And we are actively engaged to try and help bridge the gap between this being a discussion about the law and which is important, and the application of it in our real lives and with our families and our neighbors.
And do you agree with what Danny said, that this is part and parcel of a larger effort, not just here in Florida, part of a long, I guess, struggle when it comes to reforming criminal justice systems all over the country?
I would say it might be. I know for me, the guiding North Star in my life are the real people, the returning citizens in Florida, an amazing, wonderful group and the community who is engaged in every community across our state. We're trying to help make Florida better, create safer communities, you know, and there's barriers to jobs, barriers to housing, barriers to higher education that get in the way of that. And the first step ultimately was to get your voice back. And that's what we're seeing. The energetic give and take of public debate is healthy, and we're grateful to be a part of it, but we're also hoping to educate people,
Neil,
about the challenges of the criminal justice system.
Do you have your right to vote back in Florida, Neil?
I do. I registered on January 8th. I got my card. I live in Lee County, and I'm looking forward to exercising that right.
Neil Voltz is the political director for the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. Danny Rivero has been along with us, a reporter here in South Florida for WLRN. Danny and Neil, thank you so much for sharing your time with us here, talking about the restoration of voting rights. Still to come on the Florida Roundup, local taxes. That's next. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, from the Panhandle to Key West, voters in Florida decided to raise taxes on themselves over the past year. In fact, voters in 13 Florida counties okayed a combination of higher property and or sales taxes to pay for stuff that they needed, like higher teacher pay, transportation, sidewalks, and more.
Florida, of course, prides itself on low taxes, right? We hear and see this all the time. No income tax in the Sunshine State. Now, the new local taxes approved in 2018 will cost $40 billion by the time the tax increases expire. This is according to Florida Tax Watch. Some of these increases last for 4 years. Others will last for 3 decades. But one bill that state lawmakers are considering in Tallahassee could make it tougher to get local tax increases approved in the future. The legislature would require that local tax questions appear on November ballots. The bet here, of course, is that voter turnout is higher in the fall election. That would make it more difficult then for a tax referendum to pass.
We're going to take a closer look at this right now here on the Florida Roundup. Whether you're in Tampa, Fort Lauderdale, or Gainesville, or somewhere else in the state, did you vote for higher local taxes last fall? Maybe you didn't. What do you expect in return for your vote when it comes to levying those higher property or sales taxes? And do you think the state government has the right to dictate when a local tax question appears on your local ballot? What do you think about that? Give us a call here on the Florida Roundup at 305-995-1800 or tweet us at Florida Roundup as we welcome Brian Willis. He's a founder and a volunteer with the All for Transportation voter effort in Hillsborough County. And Brian, this was a voter petition effort in Hillsborough that put forth a half-cent sales tax for transportation. And this passed easily, 57% of the vote. Tell me a little bit about the effort and why you think it was so popular.
Hi, Tom and Melissa. Well, this was really a unique effort that came about rather quickly in the context of the most recent election. We're a group of citizens. There were five really key founders, but a much broader group of 77,000 people that signed petitions in Hillsborough County to put a charter amendment on the ballot. That amendment to the Hillsborough County Charter provided for a 1 cent sales tax that would go to transportation improvements in Hillsborough County. In Hillsborough County, at the same time that we were going to ballot, the schools were going to ballot with a half cent sales tax. That was approved in Hillsborough County by 56% of the vote. So in total, Hillsborough County voters voted to fund their local needs in transportation and schools to the tune of a 1.5% sales tax increase. But really, the transportation effort itself was based on 30 years of effort. When we passed, a member of the Chamber of Commerce of the City of Tampa came up to us and said, you know, this was something that we began working on in 1990. We formed the City of Tampa Chamber Task Force to get this funding.
Brian, it's Tom Hudson. Obviously, a long road to get where you got to in November. It passed with 57% of the vote. What if the state legislature decided to apply the same standard for local tax referenda that it has for constitutional amendments, and that would be the 60% approval standard? Would that be something you could support?
No, and I think that it's great that you bring that up, because that's obviously a poison pill that's being put out there. One of the articles that was written in the paper quoted a Tallahassee legislator saying these initiatives were easy to pass, and therefore that's why they needed to raise the standard. And as somebody who was on the ground trying to get this passed both in 2016, and I was involved in prior failed efforts in 2014 in Pinellas County and 2010 in Hillsborough County, these are incredibly difficult. And when voters vote to raise their tax by a majority, you know, we need to respect that democratic process.
It's 305-995-1800. Do you think the legislature is overreaching or not, as cities and counties around Florida have voted recently to tax themselves for a variety of needs? Christina is in Winter Park. And Christina, hi, good afternoon. What are your thoughts about this?
Oh, good afternoon. Yes, I'm in Orange County, and I feel strongly that our public school teachers deserve some extra pay or higher pay, because they're working hard, and we need to attract good teachers and let them stay in our state so they can earn a good living. I've lived in other states up north, and the pay is a lot higher for the public school teachers. Yes.
Christina, thanks for that. You know, Brian, in St. Johns County, which is in North Florida, that voter base decided to tax themselves to better fund their school system, which is one of the best, if not the highest ranked in the state. And so it's remarkable to see this kind of playing out across Florida, which, as Tom said, is known as a low tax state. And many people move here for that very reason. But at the same time, they are increasingly willing to levy taxes on themselves for certain needs. And so how do you read the legislature stepping into this process? You said you called it a poison pill. And is that simply because lawmakers are just, you know, they're tax averse in general? How do you see the motivation behind this move in Tallahassee?
Well, this is the break that we're seeing between the local communities in Tallahassee is really driven by the gerrymandering of districts. So you have a legislative body in Tallahassee that is reflective of gerrymandered districts and does not represent the Democratic, you know, views on gerrymandered Democratic views of this state, and particularly in the urban cities that are facing tremendous growth, tremendous pressure, that are the economic drivers of our state. Tallahassee is really out of step with the cities, and they're looking to kind of quash down on the solutions that people are trying to implement at the local level.
Brian, is this also kind of urban areas facing off against more rural or even more suburban areas in terms of the legislative representation that they have in Tallahassee? We see these urban areas, Miami-Dade, Broward County here in South Florida, Palm Beach County, all three of them, and Monroe County. All four counties in South Florida have approved tax increases over the election cycle in 2018. Melissa mentioned St. John's County. You're obviously in Hillsborough County. Is this, facing off those lawmakers versus the lawmakers in Jefferson County and Hendry County, more of the rural areas?
Yes, but I think it's not really a rural-urban divide without the gerrymandering, right? Because what you have is you have for any given metropolitan area in the state of Florida, the rural areas and the exurban areas are overrepresented in the legislature, and the districts are drawn to be safe for certain Republican candidates disproportionately. And so that is what's creating this conflict, whereas the urban voters are, on the flip side, are underrepresented. And so that's why you're seeing this break, right? Where you do have a Democratic result producing tax increases, and you have legislators from that same community who are saying, I'm going to stop my voters from doing this.
Let me remind folks that you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Harriet in Williston is on line three. Go ahead, Harriet. You're on the radio now.
Yes, I'd like to give an example. I live in a rural county. We probably have about 40,000 people in the entire county and in Levy County. And at one time, I was representative by State Senator Keith Perry. And this is when the anti-fracking bill first came up. And I asked him why he voted against it. And he said, I think fracking is not right for Florida, but I am against home rule. And when we had our Amendment 1, the land and water legacy we were worked so hard on, he actually got on the television and said that the citizens should not tell the legislature how to spend their money.
Well, so let me go back just a quick second there. Home rule is this idea that kind of, the more local the level of government, the more, I guess, power it should have because they're closest to the voters, to the constituents.
Well, I don't know whether they should have more power, but I think that our rights to put in our own codes, our own regulations about how we want our community to be established, and our school boards especially, even our school board here, they're tired of the unfunded mandates the state is putting on us.
And home rule's typically more the conservative mantra, which makes this, I think, all the more striking, Brian.
Yeah, but I've been living it on transportation for more than a decade at this point. You see this really interesting flip that has happened within the Republican Party, not on every issue, but on a lot of issues where they have become a big government party where it serves their societal, viewpoint. Whether that was the fight we had over smokable marijuana that's finally resolving because we had a change in governor, whether it's transportation, whether it's schools, whether it's, gay rights. There are numerous examples of the Republican Party being the more aggressive government, big government party over the rights of local citizens. And this is another example that would stop local voters from controlling what happens in their community.
Brian, curious, out of the, 260-some-odd million dollars you expect your sales tax to raise over 30 years in Hillsborough County, how much of that do you think is going to be spent by folks who live and call home Hillsborough County versus tourists?
Well, all of the money has to be spent within Hillsborough County.
Spent, but I mean raised. Who's going to pay that tax?
We had that number during the campaign. So if you'd asked me a couple months ago, I would have had it on the top of my tongue. But it was somewhere between 20% and 30% was going to be paid by tourists. And they're also, you know, they're also one of the main users of our roadways right here in Hillsborough and across the state of Florida. We have the benefit of having numerous tourists to sustain our great economy. But they're road users, they're transportation users, and they need to pay their fair share of it. So it's a great benefit in some ways that we can raise revenue from our tourists to help pay for the transportation system. And that's one of the reasons the sales tax was successful. I know we talked to voters about that.
Well, Brian Willis with All for Transportation in Hillsborough County, thanks for joining us today on the Florida Roundup.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And that is our show, the Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Alex Gonzalez and Heather Schatz are producers.
And taxes and voting. You don't get much more public media than that for an hour. How about it? Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, our technical director. The Director of Radio Operations in Miami is Peter Meritz. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at AaronLibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend.